This is KGNU's Morning Magazine for July 11th of 2022. I'm your host, Shannon Young. Thank you for joining us here on listener-supported community radio. And thanks to all of the new and renewing members who supported our summer fun drive last week. Coming up on today's program, we'll have our latest installment in our Follow the Waste series. This time, we'll trace the trail of waste from beauty salons. Demonstrators rallied in Boulder on Saturday to show support for reproductive rights that are losing ground in other states. And CityCast Denver asks if scooters are good for Denver or a menace, or both. At the bottom of the hour, we'll hear the BBC News headlines and then the Hightower Lowdown. After that is Storytellers of Color. Host Rosanna Longo-Better will speak with Denver author Callie Fajardo-Anstein about her latest novel, Woman of Light. Then at 9 a.m., we'll bring you Counterspin, a look at fairness and accuracy in reporting. After that, Cal Huss will be in the Denver studio for the Morning Sound Alternative. All that's still ahead this morning, but first, these headlines with KGNU's Chiara De Mare.
Colorado health clinics have almost doubled the amount of abortion services they are providing to out-of-state clinics. According to the Colorado Sun, in an effort to expand access, productive health care providers are increasing telehealth consultations and mobile clinics across the state. Others are stockpiling Plan B. Later in the show, we'll hear from KGNU's Carl Armin, who went to a reproductive rights rally on Saturday. Boulder Valley Women's Health Clinic has been around since 1973, and the providers told the Colorado Sun that patients go in for abortions, but people are also there for breast and cervical exams, gender-affirming care, routine annual exams, and other preventative care. According to the Denver Post, on Saturday, a woman passed away in a boating accident on Lake Pueblo. This is the second death in about 2 days on the lake, and she is at least the fifth person to have died on the lake this year. In May, a boat with 13 people on it capsized, and 2 people died. In July, a swimmer drowned, and in June, the lake had back-to-back deaths, both from drowning. State park officials have been stressing the importance of water safety while still having fun. Safety measures include wearing a life jacket, knowing the weather and water conditions, and staying sober while out on the water. Bridget Kochel, a spokeswoman for Colorado Parks and Wildlife, told the Denver Post, "We don't want people to be scared of the water. We want people to have fun. We just need to stress how important it is to be safe." Demonstrators gathered on the steps of the Capitol in Denver on Sunday to call for legislative action to allow local governments to implement measures to control skyrocketing rents. KGNU's Luis Lacone has more.
With the cost of high living across the country skyrocketing, many families in Colorado are struggling to keep up. Inflation and high gas prices are contributing factors, but the rent hikes on already high rent are hitting many families particularly hard, especially those led by single parents. Around 50 people gathered in the heat on the west steps of the Capitol Sunday to demand a repeal of rent stabilization ban that the state legislature enacted back in 1981. The ban prevents local state governments from adopting rent stabilization policies appropriate for each local circumstance. The Colorado Supreme Court upheld the ban in 2000 after the mountain resort town of Telluride attempted to control skyrocketing rents within its limits. Among the rally attendants was Denver City Council President Pro Tem Jamie Torres. What we're expecting in West Denver is an infusion of investment purchases of homes. Those homes would never come back to the market, they would never come back to the individual purchaser, so they will always be rented, says Torres. Repealing the 1981 rent control ban would require legislative action, and the legislature is out of session until January of 2023. Housing rights advocates and families that attended Sunday's rally wanted elected officials to take action. For KGNU, I am Luis Licon.
Around 3 p.m. on Sunday, a lightning strike started a fire at the intersection of Old Stage Road and Red Hill Road in Northwest Boulder. According to the Daily Camera, when first responders got to the fire, they found 2 trees and a nearly 20-foot by 20-foot section of grass on fire. There was no damage to nearby property. The Millennium Harvest Hotel may possibly be demolished and turned into student housing. Historic Boulder says the city made the decision to demolish the building without public input. Historic Boulder Executive Director Leonard Siegel told the Daily Camera, "It's the largest building that is ever going to be demolished, and it's over 50 years old. We're just wondering why there was no public review for that." The hotel would be turned into 3 four-story buildings with a total of 931 rooms and 245 apartment units. Boulder's planning board and city council have approved the conceptual plan for development, but to continue, they will need to get a site approval from the planning board and city council. Today across the Front Range, it's expected to be much cooler than yesterday. In Fort Collins, there's a high of 82 and a low of 60. In Denver, a high of 80 and a low of 65. In Boulder, there's an expected high of 77 and a low of 63. Outside the studio, it's 64 degrees. For KGNU, I'm Kiara Damari.
You are listening to The Morning Magazine on KGNU. I'm Shannon Young. One of the latest trends in the beauty industry is to keep the large volumes of waste that salons generate out of landfills. Looking good now means being sustainable. A handful of companies are collecting the hard-to-recycle beauty items, but once they leave salons, they seem to disappear into a black hole, or rather a green hole, destination unknown. For KGNU's Follow the Waste series, Franny Halperin has the story.
Many of us book appointments to get haircuts for different reasons. You need a trim, maybe your color is fading, or you might want a new look to get over a bad breakup.
Time to make a change. Do it in the hair salon. Get a brand new look, and he will be gone.
A trip to your stylist can leave you feeling like $1 million, but looking good has a heavy cost. Beauty salons generate a lot of waste, from coloring dyes to high water use, not to mention a lot of hair.
So every minute that we're on this conversation, there's about just shy of 800 pounds of salon-specific kind of waste going into landfills. So that's all the hair clippings, the foils, the color tubes, aerosol cans, paper, plastic, the residual chemicals left over in the bowl. You know, if you did the math, it's probably 500,000 pounds a day.
Shane Price is the founder of Green Circle Salons, a Canadian company that helps salons recycle waste with a goal of diverting 95% from landfills. It's a turnkey system where participating salons charge a small eco fee to clients, like a buck or two, to cover the cost of shipping hard-to-recycle items to Green Circle for processing.
We have 16,000-plus what we call waste warriors, so salon professionals. That probably represents somewhere in the neighborhood of 4,000-plus salons. And so we've created a really cool and simple system. And I can tell you, I know the salons in Boulder and in Colorado, they really embrace the program and they're huge champions. They're waste warriors, right, through and through.
One of those Boulder waste warriors is Tara Spies, a senior stylist at Zinke Hair Salon, which has made protecting the environment a top priority of the business. Tara is so on board with the program, she calls herself a Green Circle Salon Ambassador.
They take pretty much anything that we can't recycle here, and they're able to recycle that for us.
Tara takes me on a tour through the salon to show how Zinke has seamlessly integrated the program, starting with a stop at a wall with box upon box of hair dye in shades of blonde, red, and brown.
Yeah, it's interesting because you look at it and you say, oh wow, it's a lot of colors, but then if you think about it, it's a lot of cardboard and metal and plastic.
Waste haulers in the city of Boulder take all the hair the salon generates as compost, but the rest goes to Green Circle.
They actually rinse out, they wash and recycle all of our color tubes along with the foils, because, you know, when there's color in there, you can't just send it to a regular aluminum recycling center.
Yeah. So I never knew how dye came. You know, I don't know what I thought. I don't work in a salon, so I had no idea what. So they come in boxes, and then there's tubes inside, like mm-hmm. kind of like a tube of toothpaste.
Yep.
And then the whole tube with the leftover, whatever remnants, goes to Green Circle. Do you know exactly what they do with it?
I don't know exactly what they do with it.
Yeah, no worries.
Yeah, to me, recycling, I'm like, oh, That's what it is. We've covered maybe one out of like six bins. Oh, so my. Come with me.
In the break room, there are several receptacles. A first is marked City of Boulder Compost and takes not only the hair, but also food waste. There are three other bins for items to be sent to Green Circle, one of which is labeled Waste to Energy, where garbage is diverted from landfills to produce renewable energy.
Waste to Energy is for things like waxing strips, nail files, nail polish bottles, gloves, cotton swabs, cotton wipes, balls.
It's also hard to miss in the break room that there are about a dozen mannequin heads that stylists use to practice on. Their stares are a bit unnerving, but Tara says they too can go to Green Circle.
Believe it or not.
Really?
Yeah.
They can recycle a mannequin head.
Well, if you think about, look at all these mannequin heads. They gotta go somewhere.
But where exactly does it all go?
Take out the papers and the trash. Or you don't get no spending cash.
So what exactly happens to the hair color? What do they really do with the foils, plastic, and aerosol cans? On Green Circle's website, it says it goes to recycling and chemical waste facilities, clean energy producers, biocomposite plastic producers, and more. So I asked Shane about speaking with one of their partners to follow the waste on its journey.
But are there specific companies that you're working with that you're able to share, or is that proprietary?
It's a good question. It's a great question, Franny. I don't know what's proprietary. And to be very honest, I don't know that I could name the company. I want to say, if I was putting it out there, it's probably Covanta that we work with in Canada. Covanta is the company. I'm pretty sure of it. And in the US, I'm not at liberty to say the company that we work with.
While Tara and salons aren't privy to where the waste goes, Green Circle does offer their members a green guarantee that they have thoroughly investigated all of their partners to ensure all the touch points of the waste journey are sustainably managed. That green guarantee comes from a company called Carbon Trust.
And Carbon Trust does an audit, a full audit on our chain of custody of all of our waste. And they either certify you as this is legitimately what happens, i.e. 100% of the waste you take away does not go into landfill and it follows the sort of processes that you describe, or you don't get that certification.
Back in the late 1980s, President Reagan used the phrase trust but verify in his discussions with Soviet leader Mikhail Gorbachev in negotiating a nuclear arms agreement.
We have listened to the wisdom of in an old Russian maxim. The maxim is dovyai no provyai. Trust, but verify.
The idea was you take someone at their word, but you perform your due diligence. In that spirit, I contacted Carbon Trust to verify Green Circle certification, and they responded that they don't provide specifics about named clients or projects. As far as Covanta, the company Shane mentioned working with in Canada, I arranged an interview with its CEO, only to have it canceled the day before. A company representative wrote in an email that they could not directly connect Green Circle to their facilities, adding it might be a small amount that's a little hard to trace. There can be legit reasons for this. Green Circle might want to protect the research and development they've invested in from being snagged by competitors, one of which is a new company called Salon Cycle, which, in an interview, also declined to disclose specifics about waste they collected. So is recycling an act of faith? Like Tara at Zinke Salon, we dutifully sort our plastics and paper and put them in the proper bin. We just trust that it's not going into landfills, but who has the time or inclination to check? A popular TV advertisement airing in the late 1950s was for Miss Clairol. It promoted ladies' hair color and featured a pretty woman gazing in a mirror while a narrator ponders in a hushed tone.
Does she or doesn't she? Does she or doesn't she?
Hair color by Miss Clairol looks so natural, only her hairdresser knows for sure.
The premise was that it's a secret if she were a natural blonde or true redhead, and frankly, none of our business. But in some ways, it's like the beauty waste programs. They look good on the outside, and everyone, The salons, the clients, we all feel good believing it. We buy in because they're solving a big problem, and we can look ourselves in the mirror for doing our part. But a question lingers. Is that beauty only skin deep? Only recyclers know for sure.
Made a change in, that
in Boulder, Colorado, I'm Franny Halbrin.
You with your sexy hairdo, put it on display.
This reporting series was made possible by a grant from Boulder County's Zero Waste Funding Program. Around half of the states in the country have, or are expected to, restrict access to safe and legal abortions in the wake of the U.S. Supreme Court decision to overrule the landmark Roe v. Wade ruling. Colorado has emerged as a state poised to be a haven for reproductive rights. On Saturday, more than 1,000 demonstrators gathered in Boulder to show their support for keeping access to abortions and contraception legal in the state. KGNU's Carl Armin was there and shares these sounds from the rally.
This is what democracy looks like! This is what democracy looks like!
Hi, can you tell me your name and where you're from?
I'm Atticus. I'm from Boulder.
And why are you here today, Atticus?
I'm here because I feel a lot of disappointment, worry, sadness, and anger. And I think that it's really important to just show up and demonstrate when I feel that. There are a lot of people whose rights are being taken away right now. There are a lot of people who are feeling, I think, really constrained by having freedoms that were once somewhat taken for granted removed in a snap. This is really a dangerous time.
Hi. I'm Steph. I'm originally from Boston. Now I live in Longmont.
And why are you here today?
I'm here to stand up for what I think is right.
And what do you think you'll get out of the event today?
Well, I think community and coming together is a great way to make change, as well as support one another who are affected by this shift in the country and the expression of violence that we're seeing. And coming together in this way is important to me, and feeling that community, I'm sure, is impactful for myself and others.
And what do you think you'll do to continue the fight for access to abortion after today?
Yeah, so it's important to me to stay educated in terms of what's happening on global, national, and smaller scale community levels. So just staying up to date with the changes that are happening and the different forms of liberation that are possible, and then supporting those either in interpersonal communication or with my voice more broadly, or with my vote, or with my money, just showing up in a variety of ways in an educated way where I think is important.
What is your name and where are you from?
My name is Harry, and I'm originally from Orlando, Florida.
And you live in Colorado now?
Yes, that's correct.
Why are you here today?
I'm here to make sure that women's rights are protected and heard, and even though I'm a man, doesn't mean that women don't deserve the same rights that I enjoy every day.
What is your name and where are you from?
Emily from Littleton.
And why are you here today?
To have my voice heard.
And what do you think you'll get from the event today?
Well, I think what it'll do is help galvanize me to go into action and volunteer more. I give a lot of money to Planned Parenthood, but I think what this will have me do is, at my age, I have the time to be able to volunteer. I know that there are that they're setting up vans to park along the borders to help women from other states. That's where I'm going to volunteer.
All it takes is one rush hour morning to see that Denverites love their cars. Some city officials think having more environmentally friendly options, like e-scooters, are key to breaking that dependence. But are scooters really the best option for Denver's busy, crowded streets and sidewalks? Not everyone is a fan of the compact devices that zip around with abandon and can be parked seemingly anywhere. CityCast Denver host Bree Davies checked in with District 10 Councilman Chris Hines, a scooter skeptic, to hear about his dive into this hot-button issue.
Councilman Chris Hines, welcome to CityCast Denver.
Hi, thanks for having me.
So we're talking about scooters. Why and how did it become something that you are talking about as a councilperson?
So 70% of Denver workers commute to and from their jobs by single occupant vehicle. Not just they're in a car, but they're the only one in the car. And that's not good for the planet. And it's not good for community because we go from our locked homes to our garages, to our locked cars, to our parking garage at work, to our office at work. And it's possible for us to not interact with a single person. But if we get out of those cars and we're on a scooter, as to, you know, to get back to this conversation, then we can talk to one another.
Yeah, well, and I want to just draw some real quick connections for listeners, because you're talking about a lot of different parts of sort of the transit conversation, which is we, on the whole, as a city, spend too much time as single occupant car drivers. And your thoughts here, and I think this is a pretty common conversation within transit advocacy, is less people in cars, more people in other modes of transit, like scooters, is better for us all overall. So I kind of want to get to the regulation aspect, because recently in your newsletters, you've been kind of polling your constituents about their feelings on scooters, because we're coming up on this year of regulation. How are folks in District 10 responding to you when you ask questions like, do you like scooters?
So I went in a slightly different direction than I normally do with my newsletters. And I said, scooters. We, in May 21, we entered into contracts with two scooter companies, Lyft and Lime. Now that it's been a year, I want your thoughts. And I gave two options. One, scooters are good for Denver. Two, scooters are a menace. And interestingly, I had more than 1,300 responses.
Oh, wow.
Which is huge for me. And interestingly, 41% voted scooters are good for Denver. And 59% of people voted scooters are a menace. So it's a bit of the hands-off approach by vendors and the city that really make people frustrated. So I asked the first question, and then I sent a follow-up email to my newsletter. I asked another question. Should Denver pass a new law requiring sidewalk detection technology for scooters? And 77% of the people said yes. 23% of the people said no. So more than three quarters said yes. I mean, if 59% was compelling, 77% is, I mean, it's almost a slam dunk.
Yeah, I mean, I have to tell you, I only recently heard about this sidewalk detection technology thing, and I don't fully understand what it is, but if it means that these scooters won't be able to terrorize people on sidewalks, I'm totally in. But also, I have to say, I have understanding of the scooter rider as someone who rides a bike from time to time. I know that when the street is just like I would never ride in traffic on Federal, for instance, as a cyclist, I would ride on the sidewalk. I could see where a scooter would feel the same way. Like, I don't feel safe in the street, so that's why I'm on the sidewalk. So this detection technology could deter folks from doing that, but it's kind of like not getting to the root of the problem to me, which is we need more space for multimodal transit.
Yeah, I agree with you that when I campaigned, I talked a lot about protected bike lanes. You know, the mayor has been very vocal about installing 125 miles of bike lanes throughout our city. Most of them, as far as I could tell, are not protected. And just as I had mentioned, we need a broad and inviting pedestrian experience, as in our sidewalks should be smooth and clear and free of obstruction. And I think that we should have bike lanes as well that are broad and inviting and safe, and protected bike lanes are really what help people feel safe.
What do you think is the best way forward for scooter regulation specifically?
Thank you for going back to scooters. Based on the feedback, you know, it's clear that the middle ground is best. If they had to choose scooters or no scooters right now, they'd say no scooters because they're that frustrated with the current implementation. But if they could decide, the vast majority of people would say there's a middle ground and that's what we want. We want there to be scooter vendors educating. Dottie could compel them to start their education process. And about 6 months ago, I asked Dottie, I said, where's that education? And they said, oh, well, we don't want to do it in the fall because you know, people aren't riding a lot of scooters in the fall or winter. So we're going to do it in the spring. Well, it's now summer. So that's part of the reason why I started to get a little more public with my active in the conversation.
Councilman Hines, thank you so much for joining me. This has been a really enlightening conversation.
I'm excited to be here. This has been a lot of fun.
You just heard an excerpt from CityCast Denver, the local Denver daily news podcast. Learn more about subscribing to the podcast at denver.citycast.fm or wherever you get your podcasts.
That's all the time we have for today's Morning Magazine. I've been your host, Shannon Young. Special thanks to Kiara de Mare, Alexis Kenyon, Luis Licon, Lily Noble, Franny Halperin, Carl Armin, and the CityCast Denver crew for their contributions to today's program. Stay tuned for a commentary from Jim Hightower, and then it's Storytellers of Color with Rosanna Longobetter. That's just after these news headlines from the BBC.
BBC News with Julie Candler. Germany's economy minister says Europe needs to be prepared in case gas shipments from Russia do not resume following today's closure of the Nord Stream 1 pipeline for maintenance. Robert Habeck said he was deeply concerned that gas supplies to the EU were being used as a weapon in order to turn member states against one another. The Russian military continues to bombard regions across Ukraine. Officials in Kharkiv in the northeast say shelling there hit a shopping centre and houses, killing three people. There have also been missile attacks in Odessa and Mykolaiv in the south. The award-winning Iranian film director...